from WBUR Boston. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The NBA journeyman Jason Collins has finished his season for the Washington Wizards and is now a free agent. Wherever his career takes him next, he's carved out a place for himself in American sports history with a cover story in Sports Illustrated where he lays it on the line. I'm black and I am gay. This hour on Point, the meaning of Jason Collins' words. You can join us. What do you make of Collins' announcement yesterday? Big news? A breakthrough? No big deal? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll be hearing from tennis legend Martina Navratilova for her thoughts on this story. But first, let's go to Franz Lids in Pennsylvania. He co-authored with Jason Collins the cover story in the May 6th issue of Sports Illustrated. You can link to that story by going to our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for being with us, Franz.
Oh, my pleasure.
So last week, Jason Collins apparently invited you to his home and began crafting this public declaration. Explain how this all came about.
Well, just before Easter, I got a call from a friend of mine, a childhood friend, who is his agent, and he threw out a hypothetical that if he had one of his clients wanted to come out, would I be interested in writing a story? And I said, sure. I had no idea who the guy was, what sport he was in, but... you know, I was game for it. I just thought of it as the next adventure. And then we kind of worked out the details, and I asked not to know who the player was because if there were a leak, I wouldn't want to be the source of it. And I like surprises anyway. So I was, turned out the player didn't want to come out, and it was obviously at that point a basketball player, an NBA player, and he didn't want to come out till after the season. He didn't want to be a distraction to the team, and so I knew it wasn't a playoff team. But I didn't really do any digging because, you know, I have sort of part of the deal that I wouldn't try to figure out who this guy was. And I was on assignment in England and flew back home and then flew to Los Angeles last Tuesday with my younger daughter, Daisy, who's a fantastic typist. And as a Sarah Lawrence graduate, she is well-versed in gender politics. So we went out there on Wednesday. We went to his home and interviewed him for 4 hours. And then on Thursday, I wrote the story from the transcriptions by Daisy, and we bounced ideas back and forth. And then Friday morning at 8 o'clock, we drove out to his house, and Jason wasn't the only one there. It was also his father and his mother, who he'd only come out to last year. He's 34 years old, and he was closeted for the first 33 years of his life.
Let's hear from him, actually. This is an exclusive interview. I'll get more of what happened after that, Franz, in just a moment. But here he is this morning with ABC News' George Stephanopoulos on Good Morning America. Jason Collins speaking about, indeed, being the first openly gay athlete in a major U.S. professional sport. Stephanopoulos asked Collins if it surprised him that he was the first still active pro player to come out.
It's kind of mind-boggling. I think I talk about that... You know, I never set out to be the first, and it's, you're sort of waiting around for somebody else to, raise their hand, and, I'm ready to raise my hand, but, you still look around like, okay, come on, guys.
And so, Franz, what was the impetus for this? Why this? Why now?
You know, it was very frustrating to keep the secret concealed. I mean, he didn't tell his twin brother until he was 33, and his twin brother was floored. And he just was tired of waiting. And then, part of the impetus was the lockout a year and a half ago, the NBA lockout, that he had a routine down, and without basketball to play. It looked like the season wasn't going to even happen. He just started thinking about his career and what he wanted to do and why he hadn't come out. And then he came out to a friend and an aunt. The aunt said she thought he was gay all along, which surprised him. And then he finally came out to his family, which was maybe a little more difficult. And then he was thinking of coming out, but he signed with the Celtics. So he's kind of the quintessential team player in that, you know, he's not a prolific scorer. He's a role player who sets screens, and he kind of gives himself up for the good of the team. And
he thought this would take attention away from what the team was doing?
Well, exactly. You know, when the season began or even the preseason, he wanted to be all about the team, and he didn't want to be the focus. So he said, okay, I'll talk after the season. Well, he was traded in February to Washington, became more frustrating because, you know, the Supreme Court was weighing, all the nine jurists were weighing whether to, you know, the fate of same-sex marriage. And he wanted to speak out, but he couldn't. And I guess the year before, his college roommate at Stanford, Joe Kennedy, the representative from Massachusetts, marched in the Boston Gay Pride Parade, and he couldn't because he was afraid that he might be outed. And he was—he said he's not an envious person, but he was actually jealous of Joe for being able to, as a straight guy, to walk in the gay pride parade, and he couldn't.
So there's been also—I'm going to interrupt you, but just for time's sake—but there's all sorts of response to this news, Franz. I want to play a clip here from the White House at a press conference yesterday. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said that he hadn't spoken with the president about the NBA player's announcement, but he said that the White House is supportive.
Here at the White House, you know, we view that as another example of the progress that has been made and the evolution that has been taking place in this country, and commend him for his courage and support him in his in this effort, and hope that his fans and his team support him going forward.
Jason Collins writes in the Sports Illustrated piece with you, "It takes an enormous amount of energy to guard such a big secret. I've endured years of misery and gone to enormous lengths to live a lie," end quote. How did he navigate the world of professional basketball all these years, Franz? The parties, the life off the court with all the players. What was that like for him?
It was, you know, basically leading a double life. And he's a private person. He never really got close to other players. You know, it was just sort of, as he says, what's in the locker room stays in the locker room. And he called it wearing a mask when he was there. And he wore it so long that it was hard to separate that from his actual feelings.
He's now a free agent, and I'm curious, does he have any trepidation about what comes next and whether this new status will affect his marketability as a player in the NBA? I mean, he's had quite a career, not necessarily known, but in the league, well-known and well-respected. What are his feelings about moving forward now?
You know, he says he's a pragmatist, that, you know, he hopes for the best, prepares for the worst, and he thinks he should be evaluated for his contribution or potential contribution to a team. And he's still in fabulous shape. And there's a role for seven-footers, no matter how old they are. Some guys go into their early 40s in the NBA, just on the end of the bench, filling in for 10 minutes a night. So I think he has an advantage over others who've been in his position in their mid-30s and free agents, that, you know, there's a place for them in the NBA. I think there's no question that he's going to be picked up by another team.
Is it, to your mind, one man's story, this story, or is this an historic moment in sports history?
Well, it's historic. I mean, it doesn't perhaps reach the Jackie Robinson moment, because Jackie Robinson couldn't hide his color. But, you know, it's certainly in the pantheon, and that, you know, he's what he's doing for other players, other kids who are kind of struggling with their sexual identity, and now they have somebody to look up to and somebody who's kind of blazed a trail that they can follow.
This is a first in professional sports, as we said, NBA, NFL, NHL, all of them. So the NBA player comes out first with this announcement. What do you foresee next? Football, baseball?
I would think, well, maybe hockey, I would say. Because, you know, in every sport, there are obviously gay players who are closeted. And to this point, everyone has been afraid of what the repercussions are. And he shows, or he has shown in the last 2 days, that he's kind of welcomed by players, front office personnel, even fans, with kind of open arms. So
it has been quite quite a reaction, that is for sure. Franz Lynn, thank you very much for your time today. Franz is a writer for Sports Illustrated. He co-authored this cover story we're talking about with Jason Collins on the May 6th issue of the magazine. It's online now. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking about NBA free agent Jason Collins and his coming out as gay in Sports Illustrated magazine yesterday. Joining me now from Grand Rapids, Michigan, is LZ Granderson. He's a journalist and commentator for CNN and ESPN. He is himself an openly gay black man. LZ, a pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
In his announcement, Jason Collins started out by saying, quote, "I am black and I am gay." How does race play into this announcement? And is the first half of that statement as important as the second half?
Well, I don't think you can separate the two. And I think, you know, having not spoken to him about that particular sentence, I think that was his point, was that, you know, so often in the conversation of LGBT rights, there's this rule of thought that the black community, that the African-American community is not as accepting or as embracing of LGBT issues or LGBT people. And what that statement does is sort of remind people that LGBT people are also black, and that it's not an LGBT community and a black community, but that there's an intersection there, and Jason is very comfortable now at the intersection.
And so what has been the reaction within the black community?
You know, if you look at Twitter, it's all over the place, right? I mean, you have some people who are saying they're very happy for him, they're very proud of him, that they stand with him. You have some people who, you know, are very religious, and they cite the religion as the reason why they don't approve of what Jason has done, or, you know, who Jason says that he is. And I think that's just emblematic of, you know, the larger community, the larger culture at large, is that, you know, you still have some people who have some issues with LGBT people and LGBT issues, which is the reason why the Defense of Marriage Act is still so controversial. It's the reason why you can still fire people for being openly gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or you can deny them housing.
LZ, you wrote a headline of your own last year, very similar to Jason Collins, wherein you said, "I am black, I am gay," and you also said, "and I am Christian." I'm curious, how did Collins' faith play into his announcement, would you say, and how did it play into yours?
You know, again, you know, trying to shed some light into the conversation. And oftentimes, again, is framed as you have the LGBT community and then you have the religious community as if they're separate. And by me proclaiming every aspect of my being, I try to remind people that, you know, we don't exist in compartmentalized boxes, you know, where you're a Christian, so you can't be this, or you're black, so you can't be that, that they're, you know, that, you know, we're messy. Human beings are messy, and we don't stay in nice, neat little, you know, folders, but that our lives spill out all over the place. And I really appreciated Jason embracing his spiritual side as well, because it doesn't belong to a particular party. It doesn't belong to a particular thought pattern. God is too big for that. And the fact that he's claimed his piece of God, in addition to his identity as a black man, in addition to his identity as a gay man, definitely provides some fodder. But for him, it's just a part of his everyday being.
What impact does this news have on the league, would you say? I mean, I'm reading a lot here about major sports leagues preparing to various degrees for the moment when an active player does make an announcement like this. The NHL recently announced a comprehensive program for training and counseling on gay issues for its teams and its players, the NFL as well. So what impact do you see this having on the league?
Well, you know, the NBA, to its credit, has been dealing with this issue in one way or another for decades. You know, remember back in 1991 when Magic Johnson announced that he was HIV positive, you know, David Stern in the league was somewhat forced to kind of have this conversation because especially back then, HIV and AIDS was condemned as a gay disease. And thus people were thinking that Magic was gay. And you heard a lot of homophobic remarks from players and fans upon that announcement. And so the league has been working on this workplace issue, if you will, for decades. And I think what you're seeing now is the culminating effect of all that hard work. The other leagues are, in my opinion, catching up to what David Stern has done in the NBA for some time. They've been working with the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network even before Kobe Bryant made his remarks that got him fined. So the impact that it has on the league, I think that it's just one more step in what has been decades of steps for this particular league and decades of steps for this conversation.
Let me bring in now to the conversation from Washington, Kevin Blackiestone, a professor of sports journalism at the University of Maryland and a panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn. Welcome. Nice to have you, Kevin.
Thank you, Jane.
Tell us about Jason Collins' credibility in sports. What's his career history?
Not very good. It's amazing that he's hung around the NBA as long as he has. He's been there 12 years, averaged 3 points a game, a few rebounds, most famous for all the fouls that he's had to dish out. And this year, his 12th year, averaged just over a point a game. So he's not a standout player.
And so, to your mind, would this announcement be different or more significant, or would it be taken differently if this was, a marquee player instead?
I think it would be taken differently. I think this story, as it's been reported in day one, has really been overblown. I think it's a technicality to call him in the first active player in team sports to announce his sexual standing. The technicality being only that the season is not over because the playoffs are not over, and he is under contract with the Washington Wizards, one of the most moribund franchises in the NBA until the end of June, which is when his contract will run out, and so right now he is technically a free agent. And so the fact to me that he made his announcement consciously after the season was over and not while he was in the locker room and while the season was still going on, while he had to interact with his teammates and opponents and fans and so forth around the country really makes me want to step back and take a breath and think about this story in the larger context.
Elsie Granderson,
I don't think that's been done.
Elsie Granderson, do you want to respond to that?
You know, there's a lot of things which I agree with Kevin on. There is a point to the story that is still operating in the sphere of hypotheticals, and that is he's not openly gay right now in a locker room. But I do like the fact that he's taken ownership of his story as opposed to being outed. And he's now in a position which would have been different, actually, had he come out while in the locker room. And that is the position of, if he is re-signed, that means he's being re-signed as an openly gay man, which to me has more power than being signed and then coming out. Because exactly. It says the team that signs him is signing him because of his talent, because of the veteran leadership and the toughness that he's able to bring to a franchise. And they are aware that he's openly gay and it doesn't matter to them. His talent is what they're after.
Right.
To come out while you're under a contract is brave, but it sets a different tone to the conversation.
Right, Kevin. So I'm reading here that there, you know, would this be a referendum on whether the league is willing to employ, whether a team is willing to employ an openly gay player?
Exactly, because now the script has been flipped, because there is a feeling, and I was just talking to a veteran NBA writer this morning as I was coming to the studio, there's a feeling now that the way that this has been put together, that Jason Collins may have guaranteed himself a roster spot next year, because this is a story that the NBA will want to own. And if he is not on a roster next year and he continues to seek employment in the NBA, and he has said that that's what he wants to do, then there may be some feeling from people who are supporting him today, and I certainly support him today, that the league has colluded to keep him out, and that in fact the league is not as open as it seemed like it is today or yesterday when he made his announcement. So I think there's an interesting dynamic in play right now between the end of this NBA season and the start of the next one.
Go ahead, Elsie.
I was just going to say, and you know, with that being said, you know, we already have at least one owner in Mark Cuban, who has said he actively wants to sign an openly gay player and that he would be honored to do so. So,
And I've heard Mark say that, and I also heard Mark say, which I thought was a slap in the face to Brittany Griner, when she announced her homosexuality on the eve of the WNBA draft, that he would draft her in the second round because what the heck. You know, second round draft picks rarely make it in the NBA as well. So sometimes I have to take Mark's comments with a grain of salt.
Well, absolutely. But there's also some precedent about hiring someone who's openly gay in a prominent position, and that would be obviously Rick Welts, the president of the Golden State Warriors. When he first came out, he was with the Phoenix Suns, and then he retires, and then the question becomes, you know, does the league still want him? Well, now he's president of a team that is, you know, perhaps the story of the playoffs, in the sense that they're, you know, a big surprise in how well they've played so far. And you can definitely credit Rick with some of that. Sure. You know, they rehired an openly gay executive. And so there is some precedence in this league of hiring someone who has a big position who's openly gay.
And then that's in the front office. So let's get back to the dynamics of the team. And I'm curious the reaction from both of you of how this might go over among the players. You talked about dynamics in the locker room. I mean, how do you think that might go if indeed Jason Collins goes back to another team next season? How will that change the locker room dynamics? Kevin Blackstone?
Well, you know, I don't think it'll change it very much, if any, at all. And I say that because Jason Collins has a track record in the NBA. And you could see that in the social media yesterday. A lot of people know him from being around him for 12 years, or maybe have played with him in college. He's played on some good teams. He's played on some bad teams. No one had a bad thing to say about him. So it was interesting to listen to what Jerry Stackhouse said about that very same thing yesterday, a longtime veteran in this league. And he basically said that, you know, Jason has capital built up. Now, had he been a 2 or 3 year player coming off a season averaging just a point a game, I think that players might look at him considerably different, but they have been around him. So to get this news yesterday about his sexuality, I don't think sent a shockwave through locker rooms, because they already know this guy. They know that he can do for them. They've played with him. They've played against him. He's a known quantity.
Let's get a caller in here from Nashville, Tennessee. Elizabeth is on the line. Elizabeth, welcome to On Point.
Hi, I am just very distraught that this is still an issue. I'm a 65-year-old woman, and I've made a lot of adjustments in my life, especially dealing with things regarding race and sexual orientation that I wasn't exposed to in a positive way as a child. But I don't think this should be a big deal at all. Nobody asks me when I come to apply for a job as an elementary school counselor, are you gay or straight? What difference does it make as long as you're qualified for the job and you're a decent human being? I will celebrate the day when we no longer have to listen to this much being made about a young man's sexual orientation over which I believe he had no choice. His only choice was whether to live a lie or live the truth.
Elizabeth, thank you. Elsie Granderson, would you respond to Elizabeth?
Sure. You know, I would love to see that day as well. Unfortunately, I can't get married in the state that I live in right now. And I can't get married in many of the states that are nearby my state right now. So while it's wonderful that, you know, on some individual levels that people have made a lot of significant progress in understanding and embracing tolerance, until we have that sort of federal clearing to be able to live our lives as equal, we have to be able to, we have to talk about these things, or otherwise people will forget about the inequalities that are still there.
Kevin Blackiston, let me jump to you. Should this be big news, or should we be over this by now, to Elizabeth's point?
No, we should be over this by now. There's no question about it. And in a lot of ways, we are over this. I mean, we've elected Tammy Baldwin. If you read the out list that comes out every year, the most powerful gays and lesbians in the country, you see a number of people in commerce and industry. If you look around, LZ just pointed out, if you look around the country, there are fewer states still where gay unions are legal, but there are more and more coming on the books. The Supreme Court obviously is having that conversation. If you're transgender in some states, insurance will cover you. So there's been a lot of progress made. But what this reminds me is that, you know, we have created this narrative, some based on fact, about sports as being this place where barriers are broken, where society moves forward. In this case, sports is a laggard, far, far behind what everyone else in society has done. The needle has moved plus 50 on union of gays and lesbians in this country. That shows you how far people have gone. We have major donors to the GOP who are now supporting gay and lesbian causes because people in their own family have come out and let them know what their sexual orientation is. So sports just happens to be the last bastion of Neanderthal thinking when it comes to homosexuality in this country.
One last clip here before our break. This is former NBA player John Amici coming out publicly after he retired in 2007. He spoke with CBS News about the Jason Collins decision to come out now.
I think now what we are seeing is a new strident set of young people, young athletes, who are saying, you know what, it's not enough. This is something I love. It's not enough to be neutral. At some point, as a person of great power and influence, as an athlete, you either stand for equality or you don't.
LZ Granderson, is that what you see? A new strident set of young people, I think were his words?
Well, absolutely. You know, it's been a generational thing. You know, Kevin mentioned earlier about the needle being moved and how it's plus 50 in terms of supporting, marriage equality. Well, if you look along generational lines, what you see is the younger generation is just really the group that's pushing that number up. And those who are, you know, Generation X and older, you know, we're the ones that are hubbing around 40 to 30% in terms of accepting marriage equality. So it is certainly a generational thing. But I have seen, you know, in my 20 years in this industry, such great strides in terms of athletes, both gay as well as straight, speaking out for equality. And I think that what John Amici said when he came out is very true. We are just seeing a new voice in young people being raised.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We've been talking this hour about NBA free agent Jason Collins and his decision to announce, while still an active player, that he is gay. My guests are Kevin Blackiestone, professor of sports journalism at the University of Maryland and a panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn, and LZ Granderson, journalist and commentator for CNN and ESPN. We are now delighted to invite one more guest into the conversation, Martina Navratilova. Need I say more? But just in case, tennis legend, winner of 59 Grand Slam crowns and a record 9 Wimbledon singles championships, and one of the first openly gay sports figures. Martina, great speaking with you again.
Hi, Jane. Thank you very much for having me, and great crew there, Kevin and Elsie. I would like to say it's not a sexual preference, it's a sexual orientation. So sexual preference would suggest that we have a choice. This is not a choice. This is who we are.
So tell me what your reaction was when you heard the news from Jason Collins.
Well, I figured that this would happen by the end of the year because the tide has really turned, and I think the key was President Obama really supporting gay rights and coming out in support of gay marriage. And I think now the players are feeling strong enough and free enough and safe enough that they can do this without any repercussions as far as the ability to play ball, as well as the ability to hang out with their teammates and not be blackballed out of the team, or worse yet, getting injured because the guys, you know, got it in for them. So it's all of that put together makes it safe for a person like Jason to feel free and strong enough to be able to say, okay, you know what, I'm not going to hide anymore. I'm going to be who I am, and enough pretending, and this is who I am, and deal with it.
So give us the lens of history from your unique perspective, Martina Navratilova. Remind us what professional sports was like back when you first became a household name in tennis, and when you made your own personal announcement.
Well, I mean, I had to stay in the closet a little bit longer than I wanted to because I could have been disqualified from becoming a U.S. citizen because I was still waiting to get my citizenship. Once I got my citizenship, I felt free to speak. But at the same time, I was warned by the WTA that we may lose sponsorships because there was a scandal with Billie Jean King, who was outed by her ex-girlfriend. But she said, no, I'm straight. But still, the powers that be didn't want another scandal because it would scare away sponsors on a global level. And of course, for me personally, you know, I lost a lot of endorsement potentially, but for me it wasn't about money. It was about being true to myself and being able to play tennis and be who I am without making apologies, without making excuses, and not throwing in anybody's face, but not lying either.
And so how did you make your announcement, and did you lose sponsorships?
Well, I didn't get any deals. I had won Wimbledon twice at that point. I won 7 more Wimbledons after that, and let's say the sponsors were not knocking on the door. My agent would say, when he brought up Chris Evert's name on Madison Avenue, everybody was excited. Yeah, how about this, how about that? And when my name came up, it was just silent. It wasn't, they didn't say no way. They just were silent. And so the deals just didn't happen. But the thing that hurt me, I think, more was the reaction of the crowd, which, you know, were a lot of times when I came out on the court, they weren't clapping, or they were muted applause, or some were even jeering or whistling, which is why it really hit me in 1981 when I lost to Tracy Austin at the US Open final, and the crowd just kept clapping, and they kept clapping, and I felt that that accepted me no matter what. They accepted me. But that's New York, you know. Other places, maybe not so much acceptance. It was difficult. It was not fun, but at the same time, I wouldn't have done it any other way.
Jason Collins writes in Sports Illustrated, "I go against the gay stereotype, which is why I think a lot of players will be shocked." What do you think about that, and do you think they will be?
Well, I don't know what's a gay stereotype. I don't know what that is. So gays come in all kinds of colors and shapes and sizes and personalities, just like straight people. So, you know, we have the whole run of the spectrum. So I don't know if there is a stereotype. Stereotype is what people want to see, what they want you to be, but that may not be true.
Is this at all different, Martina Navratilova, for male athletes than for female athletes? Is there a culture within big game sports that makes being gay harder for a male than for a female athlete?
Well, I think women, a lot of straight girls don't even go into sports because they don't want to be bullied. They call it a lesbian. It's like if you're an athlete, woman athlete, you have to prove your heterosexuality. For guys, it's the other way around. When you're playing football, it's assumed that you are straight because, of course, you know, gay guys are sissies and they wouldn't want to play football. So it's almost understood that, of course, you are straight because this is a macho sport. But on the other hand, to me, it would make it easier for me to come out because I obviously am so macho. I'm playing football, so... You have a problem with my sexuality, really? But, you know, look at, watch me tackle or watch me run with the ball. So it's funny that it's taken this long. But again, for team sport athletes, it's much more difficult because they could totally be blackballed out of the league, whether it's the front office or the coaches. There was a homophobic coach, her name was Renee Portland, she coached Penn State. She flat out said, I will not have any lesbians on my team. She recruited with the parents saying, I assure you there are no lesbians on my team. That was that kind of a homophobic aura that she had. Now you have that guy, I forget his name, he just got fired, the Rutgers guy. He got fired for calling his players faggots. What's his name?
Rice, Coach Rice. Rice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Coach Rice. He was using a slur as a way to motivate his players to prove that they were men. So that homophobia is still very alive and well, but it's for guy athletes, I think that's why it's just more difficult. But still, I cannot believe that it's taken this long for them to come out.
Martina, let me get a couple of calls in here. Let's go first to Boston and Madi on the line. Madi, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi. My point is very simple and clear. Almighty God created Adam and Eve. This is immoral in our society, and people need to raise up their voice and say, this is wrong. And they need to stop giving them so much, at least as a Muslim or as a Christian in this country, we need to unite against these lesbian and gay, whatever they call themselves. Thank you.
Madi, thank you very much. Let's go to Bob in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Bob, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you. My comment is, why do we continue to, I guess, glorify or about being gay? I mean, it's to me, I mean, I have a 13-year-old son. That's all they talk about in school is other guys and being gay. I mean, to me, it's not cool to be gay. It's your choice, and, you know, that's fine. But why don't we celebrate heterosexualism or liking a woman? I mean, I just don't understand that.
Bob, thank you. Kevin Blackiestone, would you respond to that?
Well, it's not a choice. Who would choose to be gay so that they can be ostracized and yelled at and then be made fun of or even killed for it? So it is not a choice, and we're not glamorizing it. This is who we are, and because we don't have equal rights, we need to speak out. Until we get equal rights, then we can relax and we don't have to throw it in anybody's face. I do not want to throw it in anybody's face. I do not want to be waving that flag, but we do not have equal rights. We are people, we are human beings, and it's about human rights. That's all we are asking for, equal human rights.
Kevin?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, you know, one of the cooler stories along this theme was a few weeks ago when Magic Johnson talked about the fact that his son had informed him a number of years ago that he was in fact gay, and how Magic Johnson, his wife and his family and their friends all support him, love him just the same, and are going to be with him no matter what. To me, that's the type of story that should really be getting the publicity. There is someone who is as famous an athlete, as famous a personality on planet Earth as anyone, who very quietly and very lovingly supports his child, who has understood and realized that his sexuality is not his father's and his mother's. And I think that's really cool. So I would point to that example, that family example, to the caller in terms of his own concerns.
Let's go to Wanda in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Wanda. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, if a person chooses to be gay, fine. But why, if you're an athlete, why can't you just be an athlete? Why do you have to advertise that you're gay? I mean, I just don't understand why you should advertise. It could be just done through your actions. Okay, you're gay.
Elsie Granderson, I'm going to give you a chance to jump in here. Wanda's comment, I'll let you respond. Elsie?
Well, you know, as Martina has said, you know, repeatedly, it's not a choice. You know, so this idea that people are choosing their sexual orientation is kind of a, you know, arguing a straw man argument. I mean, I don't think that Wanda chose to be whatever her sexual orientation is. In fact, I would beg to think that she would probably find a level of offense to the idea that she chose to be one way and it, tomorrow she may choose another way.
And I think also is that to define people by their actions is better than to define them by their sexuality.
Yeah. And to get more to this point of advertising and throwing things in your face, you know, I'll give you some full disclosure. I was approached by a closeted gay athlete. I'm gay. And this athlete was interested in dating me. and, you know, he was cool or whatever. But I said to him, was he willing to have me sit in the family and friends section of the arena? And was he willing to have me attend events with him as his date? Because if he wasn't willing to do that, then I wasn't willing to be his boyfriend. That's not advertising one's sexual orientation. That's just being treated as a human being and as a loving couple and as an equal. So the fact that these individuals who are still closeted in the big four sports don't feel comfortable bringing their loved ones to the family and friends section isn't about advertising or shoving anything down anyone's throat. It's about being able to live like a whole human being like everyone else. You don't think that you're asking someone's sexual orientation when you say things like, are you married? But you are. Because if they reveal the gender of the person that they're married to, you indirectly have asked that person's sexual orientation. Just because you don't say the words gay doesn't mean you aren't asking if they are.
Here's another call from Ken in Brookline, Massachusetts. Ken, welcome to the program. Hello.
Now, I'm just wondering if it wouldn't make sense to have separate showers for the straight athletes and the gay athletes.
Ken, thank you. Kevin Blackistone, another question about sort of the dynamics in the locker room there from Ken. I mean, how do you respond to that?
I think that would be absolutely ridiculous. I can't imagine why that would be the case. I mean, as many times, and Martina can speak to this, but as many times as I've written about or covered this issue, I've always tried to figure out, you know, why would some athlete, heterosexual athlete, think that a gay athlete, I'm just thinking in the male situation, that every gay athlete is going to want to come on to a heterosexual male athlete. It just doesn't add up to me why that concern is even there. So, no, there's no need for that kind of thing.
To that point, here's a clip, actually, from January 27th, just before the Super Bowl this year. Radio Shock Jock Artie Lang asked 49ers cornerback Chris Culliver whether gay men have hit on him since he's been on the 49ers and whether there are any gay players on the team. Here's that.
And what about gay guys? Have any of them approached you?
Nah, I don't do the gay guys, man. Yeah. I don't do that. No.
Are there any on the 49ers?
Nah. They don't got no gay people on the team. You know, they got to get up out of here if they do. Can't be with that sweet stuff. Nah.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
But they might be able to play well. I mean.
Nah.
No?
Nah. Nah. Be in the locker room? Nah.
Oh, okay. So they'd have to stay, keep it a secret.
Yeah, you gotta come out 10 years later after that.
Martina Navratilova, would you respond to that? Obviously, a lot of that still goes on.
Well, yes, ignorance is alive and well. Newsflash, I guarantee him that he has played with a gay player. He just didn't know it. And that's why the players are in the closet, because of reactions of their teammates that could be that ignorant and that unforgiving. But, you know, we know there are gay players out there in the NFL and the NBA now. We know one for sure. But it's still not, they're still not comfortable about being where they are, which is unfortunate. But the leagues are now supporting the gay athlete. I remember when Reggie White was playing with the Reverend, and he was preaching against the gays, and the league was supporting him. That would not happen these days. So I think the players must feel better about who they are, and hopefully, you know, will feel free enough to come out.
Kevin Blackistone, in the Sports Illustrated piece, Jason Collins says that there was one small gesture of solidarity these years that he had, and that was to wear jersey number 98 with the Boston Celtics and then with the Washington Wizards. Tell us about that number and why it has great significance to the gay community.
Well, the interesting thing about that is, and it kind of gets back to what LZ was kind of spelling out here, and I think what we're talking about at the beginning is how still uncomfortable it is for anyone who is gay in a male sport to actually let people know. Because up until now, Jason Collins had never explained why he wore number 98. In fact, I asked a friend of mine who covers the Washington Wizards about that earlier, and he told me that Collins had originally told him that it was because he got called for so many fouls, and he wanted to make it difficult for more difficult for referees to signal to the bench who the foul was called on.
In fact, it was after Matthew Shepard, who was so brutally murdered.
It was the Matthew Shepard in Wyoming, the murder, and that was why he was wearing that number. But to me, that's the overlooked part of this story. And to me, it is that the Jason Collins is still very, very uncomfortable in the locker room as a gay man, that he waited until he was outside the locker room to make all these revelations. And that just shows you how uncomfortable it is for anyone of a different sexual orientation other than heterosexuality in a male locker room to let people know about it. He was very uncomfortable.
Well, we'll leave it at that. Kevin Blackistone joining us from Washington, D.C. Thank you very much. Teaches sports journalism at the University of Maryland. Is a panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn. Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Elsie Granderson is joining us from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Journalist, commentator for CNN and ESPN. Elsie, thanks for your perspective. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Martina Navratilova, tennis legend, winner of 59 Grand Slam crowns and a record 9 Wimbledon singles championships. Martina, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Coming up tomorrow, housing prices break out of their slump. We'll look at the rebound and what it means for the nation's recovery. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.